This program was first broadcast on Arrow FM, Wairarapa's only community access media station, and shared on Access Media with the support of New Zealand On Air.
That's a bit of tea swizzle, shake it off, and very good morning to you. Welcome to Roundup. Welcome to October. I'm Joe DeCee. Thank you very much this morning for choosing me here on Arrow FM to lead you through till 9 o'clock. Coming up today, we look into the teacher-only day no longer. David Seymour's crackdown on truancy. We look more into that. Will it work? And have you received a fine from New World or Pack and Save for overparking? What's the sting operation there? The passing of two major legends in their own rights, Kris Kristofferson and the Dame Maggie Smith. I look back at their lives and careers. The unreliable Wairarapa train line. It's been bad for the past year or so, but in the last month, it was really rubbish. And a review of the All Blacks and Liam Lawson's dreams come true. And more on that later on in sports. A lot more stories, news, views and opinions later on throughout the program. Well, g'day. Great to be back in the studio today. First of all, apologies for not being here last month. I was, well, I guess you could say very busy each Wednesday. But the important thing is I'm back. Remember that thunderstorm we had a few weeks ago? The very loud thunder that quite literally shaked most people's houses? The on and off rain, the cold mornings, cold afternoons, colder nights. It's starting to get warmer now. Daylight saving, more light at night. And the closer we get to summer, we'll get even more. But in the meantime, enjoy the sunshine while you can, because more rain is on its way. And I tell you what, the rain is coming. Andrew Costa is leaving earlier than expected. He's been appointed to a new role outside of police as the chief executive of the Social Investment Agency. The debate between Donald Trump and Kamala Harris saw the meme, they're eating the dogs, they're eating the cats. A lot of fires throughout the country, including Castor Bay, Tamaki and the Port of Auckland. And TV superstar, this is the United States superstar, Conan O'Brien, a personal favourite of mine, has stopped by in New Zealand, which he was at the haka comp that was happening at Eden Park. So I think they had 7,000 attendees participate, and I think it's now been recognised as the largest haka in the world. They've taken it back off France. What happened to the one that was here in Masterton? Was that never recognised or anything? Who knows, but there you go. Masterton went down. Interesting, this is via the Wairarapa Times Age. After two consecutive months of declines, rental properties stabilised and remain unchanged in August, according to Trade Me Properties' latest rental price index. Masterton's median weekly rent was $545, which was down 1.8% in July and down 0.9% year-on-year from August 2023. TradeMe did not have enough data on Wairarapa's smaller town to give statistically meaningful information. The median weekly rent nationally in August was $640, and while there was no change month to month, prices were 3.2% higher compared to August 2023. On the supply side, the situation remained strong. While listings have fallen 3.4% from July, they were still up 38% year on year. Demand continued its downward trajectory, falling 13% between July and August and down 36% compared to last August. Gavin Lloyd of Trade Me Property said the flat pricing was to be expected. We've seen a change in market dynamics this year with increasing supply coming at the same time as reducing demand. While we've seen a drop-off in supply, from July, it's still tracking strongly compared to demand, making it a kind of market for renters than in previous years. Silky Oak Chocolate has fallen victim to the cocoa crisis and says a price increase for their chocolate treats is weeks, if not days, away. Tucked in Waiohiki, the Hawke's Bay icon is battling the global cocoa shortage, with its cost for cocoa going up by a third. Owner Jeanette Dorwin said she could no longer hold the prices and would be forced to pass some of the additional cost onto her customers. Dorwin said the increase was caused by a drought and a disease that has killed off the cocoa trees in the plantation in Africa, where she purchased her cocoa beans. The cocoa swollen shoot virus disease, CCSVD, spreads through mealy bugs that feed on cacao crops. When plants get infected, it might show symptoms, including rounding and shrinking of the cacao pod. swelling at the stems and the roots in red veins on immature leaves. The rainforest tree, which cannot be grown in Hawke's Bay, takes about 5 years to grow mature before it starts to produce the pods. And Darwin said the problem would be long-term. Always has to affect the small local businesses, doesn't it? Diseases overseas and all that. Speaking of chocolate factories, did anybody watch Country Calendar the other night of the Warrapa family out on the coast? So obviously the parents were the farmers. One son had a cafe and the other son had a little bit of a chocolate factory going on there. If you haven't already, go on to, is it TVNZ Plus? It might be on there, Country Calendar, or maybe search up Country Calendar on YouTube. You might find the episode, who knows. But it was a really good watch and I do recommend watching it. Teacher Only Day, David Seymour, the Associate Minister of Education, has said there will be no more Teacher Only Days during the school term. So yes, the quick summary of that is, if a Teacher Only Day occurs, it will be during the school holidays. He's also said that the schools needed to implement a plan to tackle the truancy crisis. The plan comes in as the Ministry of Education has recently released new attendance data of a slight increase in the number of students attending classes regularly from 47.1% in Term 2 of 2023 to 53.2% in Term 2 of 2024. The other morning, Erica Stanford, Education Minister, announced $30 million in funding will be stripped from a program helping teachers learn Te Reo and allocated to the country's math curriculum. With the truancy, what does David Seymour come up with? A new policy. The Stepped Attendance Response Scheme, or STAR, which from 2026 will become mandatory in all schools. Seymour said that it will take obligations on the school and parents to make sure their children are attending school regularly. Some examples of how the scheme will work include 5 days absence, the school gets in touch with the parents to determine the absence and to set expectations. A 10-day absence, the school leadership, principals I suppose, meets with the parents and guardians and the students to identify barriers to attendance and develop plans to address this. 15 days absence, escalating the response to the ministry, and steps to initiate prosecution of parents could be considered as a valid intervention. Schools were to develop their truancy plans with the Ministry of Education, attendance services and government and non-government agencies. Schools will have to play their part in setting a good example as well. This means not taking teacher-only days during term time. Seymour said it would have been the policy that a school required permission from the Ministry of Education for a teacher-only day. He was only enforcing it. He also said he reserved the right to look at infringement scheme in the future if this approach does not work. Seymour had also directed the Ministry of Education to take more of an active role in the prosecution process. I've asked the Ministry to collect data on when a school is open or closed for instruction for the full day and for each year group during school time. Seymour said, any student who reaches a clearly defined threshold of days absence will trigger an appropriate response from the school and the ministry. If we get to a case where a student misses more than 15 days of term, that's when we call what we call the chronic absence. Those are David Seymour's words. That would then trigger the government and the Ministry of Education to consider fines or wraparound support services. I've directed the Ministry of Education with the active operation of the Ministry of Social Development, Oranga Tamariki, Police Kāinga and Te Puni Kuriki, Kokiri, to develop robust information sharing agreements so that staff can share appropriate information once a student has been identified as needing support. Seymour said the problem of parents who just did not want to cooperate was quite widespread. So he had received a report that an attendance officer had been asked by parents to come into their home and confiscate their child's PlayStation or Xbox as a consequence for the child for missing school. He said in most of Europe, finning was a normal thing to do. Seymour acknowledged there were some students who could not attend school and a prosecution would not work in these cases. There were others who were flouting the system, and that's where prosecution could work, he said. Seymour said New Zealand's school attendance rates were low by international standards. The government student attendance target is 80% of students attending classes regularly by 2030. Regular school attendance is defined as students being present for more than 90% of the term. Meanwhile, Stanford also announced today, Monday, $30 million would be stripped from a program funding teachers to learn Te Reo Māori and be put in increasing mathematics resources instead. Stanford said the program Te Aha o Te Reo isn't accredited and was more than double the cost of similar courses with a price tag of $100 million. Now, to some of the things that principals and teachers have said about the change of the teacher-only days, Rimarima Intermediate Principal Kyle Bruton said the idea was red herring. Any teacher-only days taken during the school year had absolutely no impact on the number of days that they were open for teaching and learning, he said. They were extremely important and included time out for teachers to review assessment, report to families and get provided professional development for teachers. That was timely and relevant, he said. Mayrow Principal School Principal Linda Stewart said that it's a complex situation because she knows that in her school teachers are basically just limping towards the end of the term. She says that teachers need time in the holidays to recuperate before they're back in their classrooms preparing for the next term. And they don't have as long as the holidays as some people think. The acting principal of Belmont Primary School in Auckland's North Shore has labelled a move to ban the teacher-only days during the term a kick in the guts for under pressure staff. I don't know why a teacher-only day would have any impact. Now, my quick opinion on the whole matter is, the first point I want to make is, who the heck made David Seymour the boss? I get what he's trying to do. It's obviously trying to crack down on the truancy within schools. Kick in the guts is a good way of putting it. A service, not a job, is another. These teachers we are talking about here, and I think I'd be right in saying, they probably do more overtime than what a politician does. Teachers work 7 days a week, 52 weeks a year. And I think that's what the government is missing here. The government was just complaining a couple of months ago about how undertrained the teachers are. And now they want to change their rules around teacher-only days. When is a teacher supposed to have their holiday time? Their break time in between classes? I believe what the government is doing around education is going to affect them come next election. Because the teachers are obviously against it. What do you think? Is National out in the next election? Who knows? This is our first song for Apple this morning. Live it up.
How can you see looking through those tears? Don't you know you're worth your weight in gold? I can't believe that you're alone in here. Let me warm you, hands against the cold. A close encounter with a hard-hearted man who never gave half of what he got has made you wish that you never been born. That's a shame, cause you got the lot. Hey, yeah, you with a sad face, come up to my place, live it up. You beside the dance floor, what do you cry for? Live it up. If you smile, the walls will fall down, and all the people in this pick up joy. But if you left, you'd level this town. Hey, no, girl, that's just a point. Hey, yeah, you with a sad face, come up to my place, live it up. You beside the dance floor, what do you cry for? Just live it up. Just answer me the question why.
Come up to my place. Come up to my place.
love you beside the dance floor. What do you cry for? Let's live it up. You with a sad face, come up to my place. Live it up. You beside the dance floor. What do you cry for? Let's live it up. You with a sad face, come up to my place. Live it up.
Well, a very good morning to you. Welcome to Roundup. If you're just joining me now, I'm Joe to see. The time is now 8:15. Welcome to 92.7 Arrow FM. So, first of all, the 43-point action plan on Monday, the government announced a 43 action plan. Do you get that? Which will be focused on infrastructure and will be the last plan for the 2024. The government's quarter four Q4 action plan will be focused on making it easier and faster to build infrastructure in New Zealand as part of its wider plan to rebuild the economy. Prime Minister Christopher Luxon says, "My government has been working at pace to get the country back on track since we came into office almost a year ago. And there will be no slowing down as we approach the end of the year." Mr. Luxon says our final action plan for 2024 will build on the previous action plans and continue to deliver on the government's core priorities of rebuilding the economy, restoring law and order, and delivering better public services. The Q4 action plan has 43 actions that include passing the fast-track approvals bill to speed up delivery of regional and national projects of significance, passing the first resource management amendment bill to reduce the irregularity burden on farmers and the primary sector, introducing the Second Amendment Bill for the Resource Management Act to cut through the red and green tapes holding back growth in the infrastructure, energy, housing and farming sectors, taking cabinet decisions on funding and financing tools to get more housing built, introducing legislation to make it easy to build offshore wind farms, taking cabinet decisions to get local councils back to basics. The plan features a particularly strong focus on the delivery of modern, reliable infrastructure as part of a major effort to make it easier to get things built in this country. So that's from the official GOVT website. In Mr. Christopher Luxon's words, Prime Minister Christopher Luxon's words. Another thing about Christopher Luxon was his apartment sale. Kind of made the news the other day. It was all over, plastered all over social media. So the Prime Minister Christopher Luxon has responded to media attention on the capital gains he made from selling his Wellington apartment, saying he expected no less. He had nothing to hide in terms of his success. And he quoted, he said, and I quote, "Let's be clear, I'm wealthy." He said in an interview, online property records show the apartment in the Kate Shepherd complex outside Parliament sold on September 8, but is still pending settlement. It is two bedrooms and two bathrooms. TVNZ reported it had sold for $975,000. The apartment was last sold for $795,000 in September of 2020, about a month prior to Luxon becoming the Botany MP. In 2021, it had a rateable value of $990,000. One Roof estimated the property to be valued at $745,000 as of September. While Prime Minister Christopher Luxon usually resides in Premier House while in Wellington, until this point he had stayed in an apartment, pointing to the need for superficial refurbishments at the official residence. The Prime Minister's office confirmed on Monday morning that Luxon moved into Premier House over the weekend. Luxon on Monday afternoon said the upgrade was a real basic elementary maintenance and included replacing carpets and a new interior paint job. He didn't provide a cost for the work, but it's been previously reported to be north of $170,000. So there's where your tax money is going to. Refurbishing the government house. Premier House, sorry, but it's probably needed. The grocery sector. The Commerce Commission has refused to give clearance of foodstuffs to merge its North and South Island identities into a single national grocery company. The proposed merger would result in a permanent structural change to the New Zealand grocery industry. "We're concerned about the impact this could have on competition and New Zealand consumers," the regulator's chairman, Dr. John Small, said today. Yesterday. "The proposed merger would reduce the number of major buyers of grocery products in New Zealand from 3 to 2, reducing the numbers of buyers for many suppliers to supply their products to and creating the largest acquirer of grocery products in New Zealand." Small said the merged entity having greater buyer power than Foodstuffs North Island and Foodstuffs South Island each to individually, which would harm the competitive process. substantial lessening of competition and the associated increase in buyer power would mean the merged entity would likely be able to extract lower prices from suppliers. But the Commission said it was concerned that the consultation with the proposed merger would lead to reduced investment and innovation by suppliers, and that in turn would mean reduced consumer choice and or quality of grocery products in New Zealand for consumers, the Commission added. Foodstuffs applied for the merger clearance from the Commission in December of last year. In July, the Commission said it was unconvinced by Foodstuffs' merger plan. The two Foodstuffs owner-operator co-ops, which run the supermarket banners New World, Foursquare and Pack and Save, among other businesses, are separate entities, though they already cooperate in various ways. So who knew that there was a North and South Island Foodstuff division? So that's interesting, and the Commerce Commission blocked them from merging to be one, which you think at a time like this would make more sense, right? Considering how everything's so expensive. And that's what I come into now, is the prices. So a new study has confirmed what many New Zealander shoppers already believed. Supermarket prices are higher than what they are overseas. Good old New Zealand. Is that why everybody wants to go to Australia? Well, just hang on to your boots just then. Don't go skipping across the ditch too quick. Australian researchers compared the prices of common grocery items in leading supermarkets in Australia, the UK, Ireland and New Zealand. New Zealand was the most expensive place to buy the items, believe it or not, with the UK the cheapest. Researchers from Edith Cowan University compared the prices of some common supermarket staples, including fruit and vegetables, milk, cheese, chocolate, meat, bread, coffee and some toiletries. Here's the winning order on the price alone. So UK on the top with the lowest prices, with the cost of groceries ranging between $314 to $329. Ireland was the next cheapest, with prices ranging from $347 to $383. Australia in third, with the price, the groceries between $359 and $368. And New Zealand, bit of a letdown here, the most expensive, with the cost ranging from $379 to $454. And there was another survey done, and it had practically the same thing, that New Zealand was at the bottom and the UK was at the top. And this is one of the problems we are facing right now in this country. Everything is just, well, it's too expensive, isn't it? Nobody has any money, so nothing is going off of the shelf. Prices are simply too high. High prices lead to low competition. And we can clearly see that. It's not only happening in the grocery sector, hospitality is the same, and so is retail. The $54.2 million loss at the warehouse group is evidence of that. I saw a video the other day of some people asking, you could even say yelling, questions at the group CEO of Woolworths, asking why their prices are so expensive, saying that people can't afford to shop there, so on. And her answer? Well, she didn't have an answer, did she? And I feel like that's the thing, because nobody actually has answers. Nobody really knows what's going on. The ongoing costs of the cost of living is obvious. In a nutshell, it's really ride or die out there for everybody, and it shouldn't be that way. Maybe CEOs need to have pay cuts. Lowering the prices doesn't happen overnight. You need to pay sources, suppliers, and the costs is a list of things. That sometimes, you know, that's something that always gets me. Supermarket chains come out with the having it tough, yet they have a whole front row of people on large salaries. Isn't that true, though? Corporate greed. So Christmas is a couple of months away, and I think, sadly, we'll see more people turning to food banks in order to get through the season. Promoting local businesses, because there's nothing that we love more here on Roundup and on Arrow FM than supporting local businesses, because they support us. So besides the negative and a little bit made-up things on the good old social media, there are also some positives. Is people promoting their local businesses. So let's give them a bit of a shout out here on a Roundup. Need a few jobs around the house done? Warrap, a local handyman, has you covered. He also offers 20% off for the gold card holders. Locally handcraft knives. I actually looked at this. It looked quite good. Maybe something for the other half for Christmas. Take a gaze on the off-the-track art knives. You're facing electrical issues. Get in contact with the Amped Electrical Wirer Wrapper. Want something from the garden? Take a drive to the Clareville Nursery and Garden Centre. Want to have a quick brunch while on the road? The Foo Shack outside the Marston Medical is worth a look. Do you want your car on a painting? Auto Art by Rochelle is the way to go. Highly recommend her work. Haven't brought anything off of her because my car's not worth putting on a canvas just yet, but I think I follow her on Facebook and she's got some really cool paintings. Want new carpet as well? Can Flooring will really lay it down for you. And one that I personally want to throw in there, which I didn't see recommended on this, was the Sweet Cheeks Cakery. Honestly, good donuts and brownies. And now they've taken on a lot more. I think they've taken on pies, sausage rolls, you know, ice cream sundaes, the whole lot. Milkshakes will really make your mouth water. So make sure you stop into that. It's the old park, isn't it? The old cafe at the park. Where the old, I think it was called Old Cafe at the Park. I don't know, but that's what she advertises it under anyway. The parking chaos. The supermarket causing angst for Wairarapa shoppers through the dishing out incorrect parking fines says it's making improvements, apparently. Revealed by an email exchange. Four people who were wrongly fined by two Marsden supermarkets said they were pinged for the entire duration while visiting the car park twice on that same day. The parking enforcement system at both Pack and Save and New World had become notorious for attributing incorrect parking hours to shoppers. A concerned Marsden resident said that he reached out to the owner of Pack and Save to point out the problem. While relaying the email exchange and social media posts, said the owners replied to say the store had been monitoring the car park usage for nearly 3 years. As the business had grown, the store had been noticed more customers circling the car park looking for parking spots, particularly during busy times, the post said. They also noticed that people were usually parked in there to go to the movies or park and stay for the day and so on. So when Pack and Save investigated customer complaints about several parking tickets, the owner said in the post that he decided that the parking time allowed was too short and customers visiting multiple times a day had been getting notices incorrectly. So there we go. So apparently raising the time limit, is it from 2 hours to three, is going to fix the problem. But the problem is that they aren't actually parked there for 2 hours, were they? They went on two separate occasions. So they could go first thing in the morning at, what time is Pack and Save open? 8 o'clock in the morning, and they might go at 9:30, half an hour before they shut. So what, they're going to get pinged for 14 hours? You tell me. Our second song for this morning, ABBA. You know, there's one band that I love, and it's ABBA. Also like the Beatles, but ABBA we go with today. This is Fernando, here on Roundup.
Can you hear the drums, Fernando? I remember long ago another starry night like this. In the firelight, Fernando, you were humming to yourself and softly strumming your guitar. I could hear the distant drums and sounds of bugle calls were coming from afar. They were closer now, Fernando. Every hour, every minute seemed to last eternally. I was so afraid, Fernando. We were young and full of life, and none of us prepared to die. And I'm not ashamed to say the roar of guns and cannons almost made me cry. Since many years years I haven't seen a rifle in your hand. Can you hear the drums, Fernando? Do you still recall the fateful night we crossed the Rio Grande? I can see it in your eyes, how proud you were to fight for freedom in this land.
Well, good morning to you. It's just going 8:30. If you're joining me now, I'm Jodeci. This is Roundup, and welcome to Arrow FM. Now, a bit on the US election, shall we? A few polls see an almost 50-50 split between Donald Trump and Kamala Harris of who could be the next US president between the both of them. I think it will come down to the swing states. Now, I've been striking conversations with people over the past few weeks on their thoughts of the US election. I would probably say 55-45 Kamala. The thing that strikes me is you have one person who will quite literally say anything to gain popularity, Donald Trump. Then you have another who's always promising, but could still do those things considering she's still the vice president. Anyway, among conversations, some of the things people have said were, why would you want someone, a criminal, as the president? Someone labelled Trump as a liar, a racist, as well as other stronger words, but we don't use those words here on Roundup. So then when it came to Kamala, the thing that was brought up the most was, it's time for the US to have a female president. But then someone also said the US isn't ready for a female president. My stance, I think it would be brilliant for a female to become the US president. But I don't think it should be Kamala. And the reason for that is because she's the VP in the Biden administration. He was rated as the most unpopular US president since World War II. Now that's really saying something. Now the most complicated thing about Trump and Harris is that Trump will give a misleading answer to a question, and Harris will laugh it off. And the one thing I will credit Trump for is when he's being truthful, which is very little, he's on a roll. He's a confident person, but I wouldn't say he's incompetent, but maybe too much of a fan of himself. The national poll from the New York Times shows Harris on a 3-point lead at 49%, while they have Trump on 46%. Another poll, Harris leads on 48.5%, Trump 45.7%. And a third poll shows Trump on 44.4%, and Harris is in the lead on 48.2%. The last poll, this was from NBC, this one, has Harris on 49% and Trump on 44%. Now, the road to 270, for those slightly confused, it takes 270 electoral votes in order for someone to win the election. So obviously these are just predictions. The numbers that I'm about to read out to you now were taken by pollsters, obviously. So these will change come November. This is just based off who you're going to vote for and when they ring up each state, and then they kind of do the math from there. So they've got Harris in the lead on 225 and Trump on 219. Obviously that will change, as I just said. This will be a tight one. And as I said before, I think it will come down to the swing states. Anyway, election next year, next month, isn't it? November. So next month we'll have more on that. The passing of two major legends is always sad. And everybody was just dropping like flies last week, weren't they? So anyway, Dame Maggie Smith, known for her wit and both comedic and dramatic roles. She had an extensive career on stage and screen over 7 decades and was one of Britain's most recognisable and actresses. She received numerous awards, including two that word is actually spelt incorrectly, so that's why I've had to got a bit confused there. The Oscar Awards, 5 BAFTA Awards, 4 Emmy Awards, 3 Golden Globes Awards, and a Tony Award, as well as nominations for 6 Oliver Awards. Smith is one of the few performers to earn the Triple Crown of acting. Smith began her stage career as a student, performing at the Oxford Playhouse in 1952. That's a few years ago, isn't it? And made her professional debut on Broadway in New Faces of 56. Over the following decade, Smith established herself alongside Judi Dench, should be Dame Judi Dench in there, as one of the most significant British theatre performers working for the National Theatre and the Royal Shakespeare Company. On Broadway, she received the Tony Award nominations for Noel Coward's Private Lives and Tom Stoppard's Night and Day, and won the Tony Award for Best Actress and a play for, is it Lettuce and Lovage? You fans out there will know a little bit more than me. From 2001 to 2011, Smith played, and this is probably one of her biggest roles, Professor Minerva McGonagall in the Harry Potter movies. Any Harry Potter fans out there? Smith appeared in 7 of the 8 films. She passed away in London on the 27th of September, aged 89, and King Charles released the statement, "As the curtain comes down on National Treasure, we join all those around the world in remembering the fondness, admiration and affection, her many great performances and her warmth and the wit that shone through both on and off the stage." And another one that was a bit of a shock from me was Kris Kristofferson. You may know of him, you may not know of him. So here's a bit of him. So Kristofferson was a pioneering figure in the outlaw country movement in the 1970s, moving away from the polished Nashville sound and toward a more raw style. He released his debut album, Kristofferson, in 1970. Among his songwriting credits are Me and Bobby McGee, For the Good Times, Sunday Morning Coming Down, Help Me Make It Through the Night, all of which became hits for other artists. Kristofferson was also a member of the country music supergroup The Highwaymen. Between 1985 and 1995, he was inducted into the Country Music Hall of Fame in 2004 and received a Grammy Lifetime Achievement Award in 2014. Also during the 1970s, Kristofferson also embarked on a successful career as a Hollywood actor. He appeared in the Blade film trilogy, among many other films of which he was credited for. Nelson and Kristofferson continued their partnership when they first met way back in the 80s, and added Waylon Jennings and Johnny Cash to form the supergroup The Highwaymen. So that's a bit of history for you. Their first album, The Highwaymen, was a success, and the supergroup continued working together for a time. The single from the album, also entitled The Highwaymen, written by Jimmy Webb, and was actually originally recorded by him in 1997. So, and I like Kris Kristofferson's part in that. I was going to play it, but we're actually going to play Sunday Morning Coming Down by him instead. So this is Kris Kristofferson, who passed away on Monday at aged 88. Well, it has just gone 8:38.
Sunday morning with no way to hold my head, didn't hurt. And the beer I had for breakfast wasn't bad, so I had one more for dessert. Then I fumbled through my closet for my clothes and found my cleanest dirty shirt. And I shaved my face and combed my hair and stumbled down the stairs to meet the day. I'd smoked my brain the night before on cigarettes and songs that I'd been picking. But I lit my first and watched a small kid cussing at a can that he was kicking. Then I crossed the empty street, caught the Sunday smell of someone frying chicken. took me back to something that I'd lost somehow, somewhere along the way. On the Sunday morning sidewalk, wishing, Lord, that I was stoned. Cause there's something in a Sunday makes a body feel alone. And there's nothing short of dying half as lonesome as the sound on the sleeping city sidewalks Sunday morning coming down. In the park I saw a daddy with a laughing little girl who he was swinging. Stopped beside a Sunday school and listened to a song that they were singing. Then I headed back for home, and somewhere far away a lonely bell was ringing. And it echoed through the canyons like the disappearing dreams yesterday. On the Sunday morning sidewalk, wishing, Lord, that I was stoned. Cause there's something in a Sunday makes a body feel alone. There's nothing short of dying half as lonesome as the sound on the sleeping city sidewalks Sunday morning coming down.
Well, good morning. I don't know why I made that ridiculous noise. Welcome into Roundup. If you're just joining me now, it is 18 minutes away from 9. I don't even know my password to my laptop, apparently. So whether or not I'll be able to give you the news, the weather and the traffic updates, let me just try that again. Because apparently my finger ID doesn't work either. There you go. Nope, that's not the password, so we won't worry about that. Today in history in 1986, Slice of Heaven hit number one. Written for the movie Foot Rot Flats, The Dog Tale, based on an iconic New Zealand cartoon series, Dave Dobbin's hit single featured reggae band The Herbs, singing unaccompanied in a cappella. It topped the charts for 8 weeks. Slice of Heaven became a hit with the film and won Song of the Year for the 1986 New Zealand Music Awards. In 2001, the Australasian Performing Rights Association invited its members and Academy to vote for New Zealand's top songs of all time. Slice of Heaven was rated number 7. In the same year, Dave Dobbin received a Rare Lifetime Achievement Award from the New Zealand Recording Industry in recognition of his almost 30 years as a musician and songwriter with bands such as The Dudes and DD Smash. Foot Rot Flats was the work of a cartoonist, Murray Bull. Now, the daily newspaper series featured the adventure of a typical New Zealand farm characters, including Dog, the sheep dog, his owner, Wal Foot Rot, well, and the neighbour as well. So Foot Rot Flats, The Dog's Tale, was a New Zealand's first full-length animated feature film, and it's probably their only. Is it? I don't watch animated films, but I have watched Foot Rot Flats many times. Highly rated. Park March, Irene went to the newspaper, went to the media, and she didn't know it was a thing to get pinged for parking over the line in a car park. The Havelock North resident was parked outside a Food Lovers Market in Treacher's Lane, Havelock North, in a free but timed car park. I was there for maybe 20 minutes. It's a straight park. So I drove in. There was a car to the right and a car to the left. And the car to the left was so close to the line that I decided to centre my car in the space that was available to me to avoid dents, she said. That meant her car was over the line on the right side, so when she returned, there was a $40 parking ticket, which read, failed to park entirely within the parking space. She posted the ticket on social media saying, my bad, didn't know this was a thing or could ever happen. I didn't know, so I really just wanted to let others know. And the Hastings District Council HDC confirmed it was an offence to not park entirely within the indicated space, partially parking in the neighbouring space. I thought that was quite obvious, though, wasn't it? For an example, whenever I'm in a car park, I can see people back up countless times, back and forth, to get it as straight as possible. Then I see some people that literally double park. Not even an attempt to fix it, didn't even try to park straight, just drove straight in and ran in and got the milk. But like this lady, she had a bit of an awkward situation, because there were cars on both sides of the park, and one of them was so close to the line. And like a normal person, you leave some space. Being courteous. But yes, you still have to stay within the lines. I do feel a little bit sorry for her, but the other car needs parking lessons and needs to learn to leave more space for other cars. The Warrapa train line services, the commuters. This would really do just as well. I'm not a commuter. I would be pulling my hair out. Anyway, the infrastructure action was going on for the last couple of weeks as Transdev Metlink staff were reaching agreements. Union members had been working to rule, taking all breaks and refusing overtime or shift changes, but the Rail and Marine Time Transport Union says they have now have a deal and they can recommend to their members. The offer includes a pay rise above inflation, keeping compensation for all types of medical termination and changes to their master roster. So before I read out the delay, I just want to make it clear. The clippies, is what you call them, the train staff, this is not their fault. The train staff are actually, at the end of the day, the saviours and some of the nicest people I've ever met with, and half the reason why I enjoy travelling on the train when I do. This is their bosses. This is Metlink. This is Transdev, which is actually an Australasian-run company based out of Australia. It doesn't surprise you, though, does it? Anyway, on September 20th, 26 trains got cancelled, and a further 27 were replaced by buses. This is over the whole Wellington network. September 19th, 40 Metlink train services were replaced with buses. 7 were cancelled, and another 3 were delayed as rail staff continued industrial action. September 18th, 147 scheduled services were able to run, meaning 12.5% of the services were cancelled because of the industrial action. September 17th, because of the industrial action by unions, 8 Metlink train services were cancelled between 12 a.m. and 12 p.m, 7 of which were replaced by buses. Now, as I said, do not take it out on the train staff. They were proving their point, and their point was proven, that if they don't work overtime, Metlink was in big trouble. And it was. I believe that the Warrapa line was the most affected. One day, the 425 service sat on the platform, and then after a scheduled delayed departure, the service was cancelled altogether. The 530 was a no-show to the platform, and the 618, well, was cancelled after departure time. Metlink provided no information to the commuters of what was going on. Eventually, though, it was found out that the services were replaced by some buses, but some people did not get a bus until after 8 o'clock. So that's, waiting for almost 4 hours. And the same continued throughout the week. Services were cancelled or they were bus replaced. That shows that whoever is in charge of the trains might need a new job. But that's not out of character for Metlink. Even with the industrial action, this normally occurs. Bus replacements, cancelled services, delayed departures. And there's always the most interesting reason for that, like brake failure. But please, don't take it out on the bus drivers as well. They just get the phone call and have to rush over the hill or at our local stations. They too get affected, and we're lucky to have so many awesome drivers who just hop on a bus and rush to our aid. So thank you for transit, thank you for the bus drivers, and thank you for the train staff for providing good service, even when, there's some interesting times going on there. The Rookie. Very quickly, another good series I've recently finished, The Rookie, and the thing I like about it, it's not like Brooklyn Nine-Nine, where it's, just a bit of a sitcom. It's not like The SWAT either, where it's just constantly going after the biggest armed criminals. But to be fair, it's probably a bit of a mixture of both. Quite funny. Like any show, there's always a sad death. They write off a main character halfway through. But an interesting end to season 6. which has left me hanging and waiting for the new season. You can watch seasons 1 to 3 on Netflix, or you can watch all 6 seasons on TVNZ, or you can do what I did, and I watched 1 to 3 on Netflix around the watch ads, and then from 4 to 6 on TVNZ. Right, am I right in saying there's absolutely nothing on the TV nowadays, like on the actual TV, not on streaming services? I tuned it on a bit on Sunday, and the only decent thing that was on was Country Calendar. You love country. Everyone loves a bit of Country Calendar. Everything else is a bit boring, and all the reality TV as well, such as, what is it, Celebrity Treasure Island? That's the worst script writing that I've seen since Shortland Street. Now, I'm not being a Debbie Downer, but there must be more exciting things to watch. Or do we all just tune in to watch The Chase and watch the sport and maybe watch the news? Or like me, have you all tuned to streaming services? I'll leave that to you. I can't do the traffic update like I normally do. Very quickly, though, F1, this is Liam Lawson. So after a year of waiting, Formula One's worst kept secret has been confirmed. Liam Lawson will finish the rest of the season driving for the Racing Bulls. The 22-year-old has been locked in to drive for the team of Red Bull at the expense of Australian Daniel Ricciardo for the final six races of the season. After then, he's expected to secure the spot for 2025. The move means that Lawson will step into the Racing Bulls cockpit for Formula One's next Grand Prix in Austin, Texas, on October 21st, New Zealand time. He becomes the first New Zealander to secure a full-time seat in Formula One since Brendan Hartley in 2018. Over the remaining 6 races of the season, Lawson will be evaluated against teammate Yuki performance before Red Bull makes a decision around their makeup of the team for the 2025. So there we go. Could he be Max Verstappen's teammate? Or maybe he might be better than Max Verstappen and could be Perez's teammate. Now we start to really wrap things up. The All Blacks. Oh! Does anybody get frustrated? I'm one of those people, right? When I'm watching the rugby, I'll scream at the TV, I'll yell at the TV, I'll do all sorts of things to the TV, but nothing changes. Probably because they can't hear me. Well, they don't care. Where to start with the All Blacks? The worst disciplined team in world rugby. We look at the players. There's some players in there that shouldn't be there and some players that aren't that should. It's been great to have our man Will Jordan back. But the big question looms among who should be our number 10. Should it be Damien McKenzie or Beauden Barrett? I think in last week's game we kind of got it right. Bodie played all right, but D-Mac wasn't bad either, as impact. We don't have much of a season left to decide who truly deserves the jersey. Or do we move Barrett back to fullback? Caleb Clark, without the yellow cards, has really upped his game this year. He was very average last year, wasn't he? Almost never had the ball, and when he did, he contributed nothing to it. I believe we still need to search for the starting front row. And I'd be picking Tamaiti Williams over Ethan de Groot for prop. And the list of player changes go on. Now, we look at our coaches. Sure, they are responsible. But it's only Razor and Co's first year in the job. Obviously, Leon left, as there were disagreements, and we could all see that. They are also learning players' strengths and their weaknesses, but there are still a lot of questions that need to be asked. For most of the season, the All Blacks were a 40-minute team. Brilliant in the first half, but nothing to add in the second. And to be frank, our bench wasn't impactful at all. We almost had both games against the books in the bag. And there was one team I was really looking forward to beating, but the All Blacks became sloppy. And believe me, I was angry. Then in the last game, they couldn't play their first half, but game-changing in the second. The All Blacks need to get it right. And they deserve till the end of the year, you know, to get it right. But if next year things are still the same, I'll probably start selling my merch. One of the last things as well is the Grand Tour. That's all wrapped up. So that's the last time of the chemistry between Richard Hammond, James May and Jeremy Clarkson. So if you're a big Top Gear nerd like I was growing up, I would have a look at Prime Video for the final season. Anyway, Luke Combs is at Eden Park on the 16th and 17th of January. Get your tickets from Ticketmaster, and I'll leave you with Luke Combs as we leave today. The kind of love we make, the time has just gone 8:54. See you later, folks. Have a good month, and we'll see you in November. Keeping the lights on.
So I've been thinking we need a little time alone.